The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting from seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Friday morning California time space show program. I'm your host, David Livingston, and we thank all of you for listening. And we have a interesting, exciting, and I'm sure quite informative program for you. I'll describe that and our guest in just a minute. A couple of quick announcements. We're looking at the 60-minute format. So if you want to call in or if you want to email us, make sure you watch the clock so that you do it while we're still broadcasting. And as always, if we're in the middle of a great discussion, a listener phone call or email will extend the program. We don't want to cut anybody off. But again, pay attention to the timing. We're looking at the 60-minute program. And we do have a full week of space show programming coming up. However, it is Thanksgiving in the United States on Thursday of the coming week, so there will not be a Friday space show program, but there will be a Sunday space show program. And so the Sunday after Thanksgiving, that's November 29th, that will be an open lines discussion. And we hope all of you can participate in that. And also we hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving holiday. I know it's being limited for many of you because of the virus and travel restrictions and other things, but hopefully you can still make the best out of it and have an enjoyable holiday coming up. We do have a Sunday program and a Tuesday program, and then we break for the holiday until the following Sunday, November 29th. So for today, our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners. Let the phone ring. We'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. You can also use email, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And we're a talk show, so we do prefer talking, and that brings us to the toll-free line. But again, I know many of you don't always access the phone during our show times, so that's why we still offer email, drspace, at thespaceshow.com. A couple of other things. Our newsletter for the week is current. It is in the upper right corner of our homepage, thespaceshow.com. When you check it out, scroll down, and you'll see all the programming we have planned between now and the end of the year. And one added note, we now have booked 100% of December, and we are now focusing on first quarter 2021. So obviously for cancellations or if something is timely, we will add a program during December. Heck, December hadn't even started yet, and we're already totally booked out on it. But you'll see the new schedule when I post it on Sunday morning. And everything we do is archived, so you can quickly download shows. You can also listen to them right off of our website. It is the holidays. It's gift-giving time. Remember, the Space Show has a logo-ware store. You get there by clicking on Pepper listening to the Space Show. She takes you to our Cafe Press Space Show logo-ware program store. Hopefully you'll find some stocking stuffer or other ideas there that may interest you or your favorite Space Show family listener or a space cadet or space advocate. If you have any questions or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. drspace@thespaceshow.com. All of our programs are archived. Remember, you can listen right off of our website or quickly download them. The file sizes are not that big. And we're podcasting, so we're on all platforms and in most common podcasting services. If you have any recommendations or suggestions, please do email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. We are in our annual fundraising campaign right now. What we're able to do for fundraising takes us into 2021, and that, by the way, will be our 20th year of doing the space show. And listener-supported means many of you, just like you listening, you're the ones that keep the space show going. You support us. And content, like we're delivering today, all week, all year, requires supporters just like you listening to help keep us going. So we are a 501c3 nonprofit with One Giant Leap Foundation. And that means if you're a U.S. federal taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true if you're a California taxpayer. We do have a large PayPal banner at the top of our homepage. That is the easiest way to support us. But if you do want to use a check, it is made payable to One, O-N-E, Giant Leap Foundation, and you mail it to Box 95, Tiburon, California, 94920. And again, your support, your donations, keep the space show going. We also have the sponsors. And remember, they get the banner ad going across the homepage on the shorter programs like today. I just shout out to our great sponsors, Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwords, Celestis, the National Space Society, and the Space Plan. If you're interested in being a sponsor, we're opening up sponsorships now for 2021. They're limited because they do eat into guest talk time. Please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Remember, your sponsor message and name stays on all archive shows. So every time an archive program is played, listeners hear your message and hear your brand get repeated. And we still have programs that are played going back 20 years. So it's a great way to have almost perpetual motion, like mentioning of your brand message or your name. So we thank you, and again, if you're interested for 2021, email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. For today's program, we go across the Atlantic to the UK, and I'm very pleased to introduce to everybody Rafael Jorda. He is a very young CEO, entrepreneur, and founder of Open Cosmos. Their website is on our website and in the newsletters and in the tweet messages, but it is open-cosmos.com. And Mr. Jorda has always been a science enthusiast. He's been space-motivated in his early years. He's a space engineer from Polytechnic University of Catalonia. He specializes in space infrastructure. He has an MBA degree as well. He's worked in several different startups related to the development of space tech, as well as in Airbus, before going to the UK to embark on his own project. And there he began his mission to attract talent from all over the world to create and form Open Cosmos, which he did at the age of 25. And this is a company with a great rise, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. So he has curiosity, he's got an entrepreneurial spirit, everything that the space show loves. So it's really a pleasure to introduce to all of you for the very first time, Rafael Jorda, probably not for the last time, and his company, Open Cosmos. Rafael, if I can call you by your first name, welcome to the space show. How are you today?
Hi, David. I'm very well, and thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you and to all our listeners at the space show.
So they can go to your website, which I announced a few minutes ago, but introduce us to Open Cosmos. What is the company all about? What is your market? I know you're in Europe, but is your market global, or are you mostly marketing in Europe? Give us the introduction to your company, and let's go from there.
Of course. So Open Cosmos designs, manufactures, and operates small satellites with the aim of helping solve some of the world's biggest challenges. Our customers are from all over the world, although we are based in the UK, near Oxford, at a wonderful place called Harwell Campus, which is one of the big hubs of the space industry that there is in the UK. And basically, we have customers that either want to provide connectivity service through IoT from spacecraft, or that want to get data from remote sensing satellites. And we are manufacturing both types of satellites. We are payload agnostic, if you want to put it that way. And all that we care about is making sure that all of those big global challenges and people from all other industries can benefit from the space infrastructure as a tool.
Where do you actually manufacture your satellites? Is that done in the UK, or where do you turn to for manufacturing facilities?
That's right. So we manufacture them in the UK, in Harwell Campus, where we are based. Just recently, actually, we have expanded our manufacturing facilities with a new clean room, another engineering lab, and another manufacturing lab as well. So it's exciting times, because even with everything that is going on the pandemic and so on, we've managed actually to set up a facility that enables us to keep manufacturing things with minimum amount of staff in the facilities, with a lot of automated testing and a lot of testing also remotely. And now, with a team of 50 people and growing, it's exciting to be able to see everything coming together.
So you do all the design and the manufacturing yourself, but then do you do your own launching, or what kind of launchers, or where do you go for launch services?
Yeah, so we have partnerships with all the major launch service providers. As a matter of fact, in a couple of months, we'll be launching on a Soyuz. So what we do is we indeed design the satellites that our customers require. We manufacture, test them. We have our own testing facilities on campus. And once we have everything ready, we also take care of everything related to frequency location, insurance, all the paperwork that needs to be done before being able to launch a satellite. We procure the launch for our customers, and depending on the orbits and the kind of launch needs that they have, we talk with some launch suppliers or others. And once in orbit, we can also operate those satellites for the customers. So eventually, they just schedule the use of the payload that they want to do through a full integrated operation satellite system that we have developed also in-house.
And so you also provide the ground service, ground station services as well, or do you rent those facilities from others?
We rent, yes. So basically, there are companies that are specialized in keeping ground segments and antennas all over the world. And we have integrated our operation system with most of those suppliers, actually. So it's really easy for us to contact any of those suppliers and make sure that through the same infrastructure that we are operating the satellite, we can tap into those ground segments that are available to gather the data or provide CTNC commands to the satellite.
So you're dealing with CubeSats, I guess, mostly. What's the typical life expectancy of one of your CubeSats, and does your customer have to continue replenishing the satellites that they're using, because CubeSats don't typically last a very long time?
Yeah, so we do CubeSats, of course, but we can also go beyond the CubeSat form factor if needed. We have the expertise and the capabilities to develop those kind of satellites in-house as well. But whenever possible, obviously, we try to follow the CubeSat standard, because that standardization really, really helps keeping the cost down, the speed of integration and of development, and the modularity, right, that comes with the CubeSat standard, that enables us to build and test the satellites a lot more effectively for our customers. In terms of the life expectancy of the satellite, it depends on the orbit where you eventually launch it, really. But it is true that we aim at life cycles in orbit that are between 3 and 5 years for most of the for most of the customers that approach us.
Can you, so you have both both commercial customers and government customers, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so can you give us sort of a profile of your typical commercial customer? Who thinks they need a satellite, and do they usually need just one satellite, or do they need a little fleet of satellites to accomplish their commercial mission? What's the profile of a typical commercial customer, and when they come to you, do they really know anything about satellites, or they just got a thought that maybe we could do something with our business if we had a satellite system?
Great question. So when I started the company, the obsession was about trying to actually make the space infrastructure and satellites available to people that knew nothing and or not necessarily knew anything about the space technology itself. So people that were focused on other industries, and they really had challenges that they wanted to sort out in those industries. And by doing the connection with the data or the connectivity services that can be provided through satellites, they were able to solve those problems. In the commercial world, I must say that we have found both. We have customers that are very knowledgeable and deep experts in the space technology itself, people that has companies that have been working for years in the space industry, or that have built companies after having been for decades in the space industry. And we have other customers that are more aligned with what I originally thought would be the wider customer base for the new space industry, which would be customers that know nothing about the space industry and just really want to solve that specific topic. Particularly, we have seen quite a lot of traction with connectivity kind of commercial solutions, several of them around IoT. So we have a couple of customers. We are developing satellites for them that are oriented to providing IoT services from space. And obviously, when you want to provide those, you can not do that only with one satellite. You need constellations of them in order to have enough coverage or enough revisit with short time between the satellite to be able to provide a relevant service for many verticals.
So with Internet of Things, are you also talking 5G services?
Funny enough, yes. One of our customers, it's developing a constellation of satellites on IoT narrow bands that will be compatible with the terrestrial 5G networks. That company is called Satelliot. We are just about actually to launch their first satellite. It's right there in the clean room waiting for that Soyuz launch. And it's really exciting because this is one of the examples of a company, for instance, that the founders have a really, really deep knowledge about telecommunication and operation services and 4G in the past and now 5G networks as well. So they come from the telecommunications world, but they didn't have previous experience in the space sector. And we are really grateful that actually all the developments and the partnership that we have established between us and Satelliot is working really well, where we bring all of our space expertise, fast deployment of infrastructure, and adaptability to the needs that they know very well of the customer. And that actually, I think it's part of the magic, right, of these solutions, being able to work with people that really, really understand the end user, that know how what are the challenges that they need to address, and let us and trust us providing the infrastructure that will help them solve those problems.
So your first email question of the day is from our listener, Todd, who is in San Diego, California. And he says, I'm interested in knowing what your customers actually want to do with satellites. They come to you and they either want some information or a product or a service or something that they're not getting from more traditional methods. What do they want from your satellites? Are they doing some kind of marketing services? Why do they need communications? Help us to understand what it is you're enabling customers to do. Why do they think they need satellites?
Yes, so to keep with the example that I was mentioning before, for instance, in the IoT field, there are a number of companies that really want to extend the IoT coverage that is currently available and make it compatible with terrestrial networks already existing. And this is the case of Satelia that I was mentioning earlier. There are other companies that are, rather than just going with the 5G standards, actually prefer to work on other standards. And for instance, on LoRa, and we have another customer in the UK that is focused on providing IoT services with that standard. And for telecommunications, it's mostly they really want to provide connectivity service into places and into sectors where that is currently not available. And I think that there is a great opportunity there for those companies. In the remote sensing field, the amount of people that approach us with different business cases and opportunities is a lot more diverse. So we have customers that want to have coverage over particular areas with a particular kind of sensor that will give them the key insights that complement already existing data sets. And they believe that because of those additional data sets, whether it is because of resolution or because of a specific band that they are using or a specific combination of sensors in the same satellite, is going to enable them to derive a particularly good service for that sector. I can mention some of the sectors where we have had traction with actual missions currently under development. The energy sector is one where there is a lot of interest, and there are a lot of these kind of value propositions of combination of different sensors or niche data set that would provide that kind of key, insightful information. The insurance sector and the infrastructure monitoring sector is another one where we see that there is that interest. And then there are the other ones also covered, I would say, for people that develop bigger constellations and services on remote sensing constellations that aim at having higher ability to have a higher coverage, that even though can be satisfied through some of those services, there are some companies that always want a bit more, right? And I'm talking about agriculture sector, I'm talking about forestry, I'm talking about some of those other sectors that are now being, I would say, properly served by companies like Planet and so on. But there are still some of the players in those industries that require an additional layer of information or complementary data sets. And when they cannot find them, we are always eager there to deploy the infrastructure that will help those data sets to be available to them globally.
How competitive is your business in Europe and globally? Because I assume that there's a lot of companies that want to do similar things to what you're doing, correct?
Yeah, I think that the key thing that we are doing is that we are truly working with very close with those customers, those end users that really, really know what they want. So we are not trying to develop a technology and push it, and we are not selling parts of the satellite or the satellite per se. What we are focusing is on those customers that really know what they want and that we find a solution with a solution that we can develop with our technologies and leveraging in some occasions actually the wide network of partners and suppliers in terms of cameras, sensors, and diverse technologies that we have access, not only here in Europe, but also abroad. And we build those solutions towards those real needs of those customers. So there are not many companies, I would say, in the space sector that have that obsession about serving that kind of end user, taking the time to understand that end user, and then dedicating the efforts to develop something that truly works for that specific use case. I see most of the other companies rather focusing on leveraging standardized technology or trying to sell the CubeSats themselves or the subsystems of those CubeSats even in order to do more of a technology push. So I think that's what differentiates us, and that's what has helped us actually be very competitive, particularly in Europe where we were born, and now also growingly internationally.
Listener Beverly, who is in Boston, Massachusetts, says, I'm assuming your satellites are in LEO. Can you actually provide the orbital range for your satellites? And given the huge constellations, like what SpaceX is doing with Starlink, are the orbits that you want to get into getting crowded, or is space just so big that there's no crowding and you have almost unlimited space for what you want and what you need to do?
So she's right. I mean, we are all of our satellites actually at the moment, all the ones that we have contracted and the ones that we see for coming are focused on LEO. Also, some of the constellations that we are also working on for some of these customers are focused on LEO. And it's going to get crowded up there. And managing that, it's one of the key challenges that we all, and I'm speaking as an industry actually, need to take extremely seriously. That's why at Open Cosmos from the very, very early beginning, we put a lot of effort on all the software to be able to manage those satellites, operate those satellites, and it's important that it's done not only in a coordinated way, but also with technologies on board of the satellites that enable them to maneuver, enable them to correct those orbits, and enable them to re-enter safely once they have finished their mission. I think that space debris and sustainability of the space environment is one of the biggest challenges that we have as an industry, and we all have to be contributors towards preserving that environment for the sake of the industry and of our business.
So your end-of-life plan is to bring the satellite down and let it burn up. Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When you are in LEO, it's the most reasonable way of bringing the satellite to end of life. If you go too high, you might have to put some kind of propulsion in order to enable that within the time span of the satellite life. But if you launch them into very low Earth orbit or into low Earth orbits, the natural decay can take care of it. Or you can do some passive maneuvers that maximize actually the drag and the resistance of the satellite and make it re-enter also a bit faster. So definitely all of those are techniques and are operations that need to be done at end of life of the satellite. And that actually with the first satellite that we launched about 3 years ago, when it finished its life, it re-entered safely through the atmosphere. So it's something that we know how it works, and that it's very important. Actually, I think taking care of that end of life is part of the service that we offer to our customer. Many times, those end users that I was talking about that may be looking at, how many houses are being built in a particular region in the world, might not care or might not know that much that all of those things need to be taken care of. But that's what, that's why. That's another of the reasons of our existence at Open Cosmos, right? Making sure that we take care of all of these things, even without the customer necessarily having to be aware of what managing and operating a space mission entitled.
You have another email question, and listeners, we do have our phone line open if you want to call us, 866-687-7223. Robert is in Phoenix, Arizona. And he says on the space show, a lot of talk is given to the commercial space, including satellites, regarding the regulatory environment. And this is getting a lot of talk right now, given the possible change of administrations coming up in the United States, with one that may see regulations more likely than what the previous administration did. How is the regulatory environment in the UK and in Europe for the business that you are engaged in? Can you talk a little bit about it? Do you think it's excessive? Is it just right? Is it a problem?
I think that the UK has always been a leader and an example in everything that relates to regulating some of these environments and particularly the work that has been done in the UK and all the consultation that has been happening over the last 5 years in the UK and on how to do that in a way that does not hamper the growth of this industry, the growth and the development particularly of the new space industry, is something that both governments and the different organizations bringing those regulations in the UK have taken extremely seriously. And I think that the contributions that the UK have done also in an international environment with respect to these topics have always been really balanced, really reasonable, and aiming at what we all want, which is to make sure that we can develop a sustainable business in the space environment.
Where do you get your satellite engineers and the people that design and make your satellites? Is this a pretty large field of people with this work experience that you can draw from, or that migrate from company to company, or is this like a very narrow field of qualified people, but possibly getting a little bit larger as the industry grows?
Yeah. So the talent and the amount of people with experience in the space sector, it's obviously limited. But one of the beauties of Open Cosmos is actually that we have been able to attract the best talent from around the world. So we pride ourselves, and we are really proud of having people right now in the company. I think it's from over 17 different nationalities. We are really, really selective when it comes to having the people joining the team. We really want to make sure that everyone is truly aligned with the values that we embody, with the vision that we have, and with that sense of service that I think the space technology can have towards society and towards other industries. That's one of the key things. Being in Europe and particularly in the UK has been very, very good in order to be able to attract global talent. Another thing that we are actively doing is, it is true that we need to have very experienced people in the space sector, but it's also true that I think it enriches a lot the team to bring people that have great experience and valuable experience for the space sector, but that come from other sectors. Because then it's when you get other points of view, things that maybe for us in the space sector, and I'm thinking about areas related to software, to machine learning, to even electronics to some extent, bringing people from other industries that have very, very relevant experience in those industries actually broadens the capabilities of the team. And it has been extremely enriching into finding solutions out of the box that probably just people from the space sector would have never been able to find, right? And that's something that we have also actively taken into consideration when we have been building the team. And by the way, if you allow me to do a shout here, we are recruiting constantly because we need to get the best talent to keep growing our team and deliver some of the exciting missions that we have ahead. So if this that I'm talking about resonates with you, whether you are within the space sector or you are in another sector but passionate about seeing how the space technology can contribute and how your talent and capabilities can contribute to the development of this sector, please get in touch with us at career at Open Cosmos, and we'll make sure to analyze case by case how you guys can join our company.
Since they would likely be working in the UK, how hard is it to legally be able to work in the UK? I don't have that information. I'm curious. Is it pretty easy for people to come to the UK and get working permits, or what happens?
Yeah. So for Europe, until now, and hopefully we'll see how everything evolves, but for people living in Europe, it was possible just to move to the UK and start working there because it was part of Europe. Now with Brexit, we have to see how everything evolves. But I suspect that for this kind of talent and for this kind of capabilities, the process will be quite straightforward. For people outside of Europe, actually, the UK is probably one of the places where for key top talent in industries like the space sector, it's easier to get a visa. And we have benefit actually because of the nature of our company, the innovation that it involves, and how relevant and important it is for the UK to develop companies like ours. We have been able actually to secure express visas and high talent visas for some of the employees that we currently have in the company and have come from international locations outside of Europe. So it's easy. It requires some time and some additional effort. But in our case at Open Cosmos, we definitely don't mind dedicating that time, money, and effort into securing the best talent, wherever that comes from.
In the United States, due to the pandemic, when governments and governors of the different states shut down states, they always have a loophole for what they call essential businesses. So I don't know what the UK does, but do you get shut down because of the pandemic? Are you an essential industry or business so you stay open and can continue to work? How does that work with the COVID problems in the UK?
Yeah, so in the UK, actually, there were some restrictions on the amount of people that you could have working under the same space and how they had to be how the right safety measures needed to be taken. The space sector, particularly even now in the under the second wave, has been one that has been allowed to be working under exceptional conditions. But in our case, from very, very, very early, actually, I remember that it was at the beginning of March, when we saw what was coming, we decided to enable everyone to work remotely except for that people that literally had to be assembling the satellites, setting up specific activities on the satellite that were being tested. And even for that people, we had a protocol with all the EPI, I am not sure about the name in English of this term, but all the safety measures that required to be put on top of the people to make sure that they could work safely. But there were days actually where 80% of our staff was working remotely. And one of the things that I'm most proud of the team is actually making sure in the week that preceded that decision that all of our facilities, testing environment, and all of the engineering capabilities that we have were set up IT-wise to make sure that they could be accessed in a safely way remotely and that it would not jeopardize the work that we ended up doing actually through the rest of the year, right? Even today, we rely on those developments that we did at the beginning of the year to make sure that we can continue operating nominally. And I can say that productivity has not been going down. On the contrary, we've seen how actually the contributions from everyone in the team has been stronger than ever.
Linda's in Los Angeles, and Linda says you're having government customers. I'm editing her email because it's very long. What kind of functions do you do for governments, and do you take on national security projects?
Yes, so far, all the projects that we have at Open Cosmos have been civilian-oriented. So even the government ones that we have one, for instance, that I can talk about where we are working with an organization in the UK called the Catapult Satellite Applications, which is an entity that helps grow the space capabilities in the UK. And basically with them, we are going to work we are going to provide them an entire mission that is going to demonstrate a key telecommunication capability. So some of the projects that we have with government are oriented towards demonstrating new technologies that are considered strategic, in this case that I was mentioning before, for the UK. and some other governments are also interested in getting imagery and remote sensing data that can use to provide services to their citizens, monitor climate, and do some of the activities that they need to be doing in order to make sure that we are in a safe environment and that cities also are managed effectively. Everything that is related to smart government, effectively, it's another of the key areas where we are having some of the satellites developed.
Is protecting your satellites from hacking and stuff we hear, you know, cyber problems, we hear it every day. Is that a big worry or a big concern at your end, or you're not targeted per se?
Well, as I mentioned, we are not doing kind of defense satellites at the moment or so on, but definitely it's something that we have taken extremely seriously from the beginning. So we obviously are aware of the amount of hacking that is going on in the space sector, and it's one of the challenges, and companies like ours need to take extra care at making sure that our satellites are not vulnerable to those attacks, or that they can be minimized, because, as you know, in hacking and in everything related to security, there is never 100% security. What you always try is to minimize all the risks and to make sure that operationally everything it's safely taken care of.
I have another question from Paul in New York, and he says, David has had many different satellite companies or operators on the show, and they talk about delivering satellite management via smartphones rather than through ground stations. Are you evolving in that direction?
So one thing is the ground segment that you use to communicate with the satellite, which is, as far as I know, except for some IoT capabilities, in most of the cases they still go through ground stations that are sizable. So this is the ground segment company that we were talking about before, David. But another of the things that can be done, and maybe it's what he's referring to in terms of connecting to the mobile phone, is what we call like cloud-based operations environment or the cloud-based control center. And all the technology that we have to operate our satellites is actually cloud-based. We saw that was the way forward from the very beginning. At the company, we can have actually deployed control centers for specific customers if they really want to, but all of our operations environment and so on is safely happening in the cloud, and therefore the operator could access that operations environment for whatever device is more comfortable to them. I'm not aware that any of them want to do that through the phone because they usually like big screens and to have all the alarms and setups properly visible. But it would be definitely feasible to have visibility over what's going on the satellites from the mobile phone through the technology that we have.
Where do you see your company and how do you assess the market in 5 years out, maybe 10 years out? Is it going to continue to grow? Is it going to level off? Is it going to become mature? Are there going to be shakeouts of startup companies? How do you see the market in general, plus your own company's five-year plan?
So in general, the market, I see it growing and growing very quickly. So the space sector is one that has been aggressively growing. If you look at the geospatial market or even just at the imagery, satellite imagery market, they are sizable markets but still growing. I think that the geospatial market overall, it's over 100 billion actually, or expected to be over 100 billion by the next 5 years. It's growing at high numbers. I think it's something close to 15% compounded annual growth, right? And satellite imagery alone, maybe it's closer to 5 billion or expected to be 5 billion during the next 5 years. But it's also growing, right, at a fast pace with growth of more than 10%. So I think that this speaks of the great work that has been done on the democratization of this technology. But now the big challenge is bringing that imagery, that data into information that can fully be actioned by companies. And that's when I think that connection that it's so needed between the upstream capabilities and the scientific capabilities or the technology capabilities that have been developed on the upstream side of things, connecting all of that diverse kind of sensors and technologies that are so expensive to develop with the big application market and with the big downstream end user markets that are there, making that connection is what will truly grow the space industry. And unfortunately, I think that even today we are seeing too much of a gap between the two. I find way too many times cases where technologies and sensors that are developed are not put in touch with the actual end user that could use the data coming from those sensors. And that's what our obsession at Open Cosmos is, right? Connecting those lines to make sure that we remove the bottleneck that we currently see between the upstream and the downstream side of our industry. If we remove that bottleneck, the growth is going to be even more aggressive than the one that we have seen over the last 5 years, and I'm really, really positive and optimistic that that's what's going to happen. But it's only going to happen if companies like ours actually take it as the number one objective, right? And if all focused on not only developing key space technology, but actually making sure that technology becomes available and the data derived from that technology becomes available to more and more and more people so they can find new business cases, they can find new business models, they can serve better society, and they can serve better the needs in other industries.
So are you in 5 years going to be doing the same thing? Do you want to get to bigger satellites? Do you want to go to GEO, for example? Do you want to put ComSats or something around the moon? I've heard people saying that they need communications around the moon, given that people are planning to go there both with governments as well as commercial services. Is that what your company is looking for in 5 years or maybe 7 years?
There are a lot of opportunities, and I know that many people actually ask about the five-year plan and the 10-year plan, but to be very honest, 5 years ago, we didn't exist, right? This is a very young company that, yes, has been progressing a lot, launched the first satellite, and now having more than 10 satellites to be delivered. We have been growing very fast and very quickly, but we work on with a shorter time mindset, where our obsession is to work with the customers that we see and that we have close to us, and totally dedicating ourselves to those customers. The plan is to keep just the activities that we are doing with those specific customers, develop the constellations that they may need, and obviously evolve our offering as we see the market requires. And when I say the market, I don't only mean the people requiring satellite missions. I basically mean the people who are going to use the data or the services derived from those potential satellite missions. That's where we are going to focus. I think that during the next 5 years, we are going to have plenty of work to do if we really want to remove this bottleneck that I was describing before. We are totally focused on activities that will have an impact on the industries and the operations down on Earth. So for us, connectivity and remote sensing are the two key areas where we focus. But obviously, we don't discard helping other scientific endeavors or other activities if we can help. All what we want is that technology and the capability that we have developed over these years and the knowledge that we have on how to democratize the use of this technology becomes available to as many people as possible, whether that is for scientific activities, business activities down on Earth, or maybe, why not, supporting some activities that go beyond Earth.
Since you're doing all your own manufacturing, do you have a reliability rate? Do you have any kind of problem? Do things have problems, quit working? What information do you have on everything staying up and running correctly, given you are accountable for all of your own manufacturing and design?
Exactly. That's a really, really good question. And one of the things that we do is that we do extensive testing. Because of being able actually to develop the entire mission and also having the ability to operate those missions, we do full closed loops, even when the satellites are within the clean room and so on how those satellites will be operated. And we test everything, not only from the electronics perspective, with a lot of automated process and a lot of tests that are very regular in the space industry and very well known how to proceed with in the space industry. But also, more importantly, we do a lot of testing on the software and on how that satellite is going to behave within the operational environment that it will be. One of the things that we are proud of having done, and that actually we are making available to a lot of universities these days, a lot of research institutions, and a lot of early startups and customers that want to start developing their technology, is we have a product that we call OpenLab. And it's basically a physical mock-up of the satellite that has the same interfaces that our real satellite has and a full simulation environment that enables the customers or the students or the universities or the research institutions to first simulate their missions in a proven simulation environment. But then also, even more importantly, once they have defined the mission or the constellation that they aim to develop, they have the possibility to develop hardware that can be integrated in that development kit that I was mentioning, and doing hardware in the loop for testing the behavior and the performance that that payload will have, first from a functional environment, but then also the development kit, it's fully tested and fully qualified to be put into through a TVAC process, brought into vacuum and through different thermal cycles. It's qualified also to do the right shaking, and we can provide masses that help actually dimension the distribution of masses that the satellite would see. And it's a tool that enables those organizations actually to fast track the development of their payload and of their sensors in a way that we know will be literally fully compatible with our satellites. So the moment that end user that I was talking about before comes to us and asks, oh, I have all of this imagery, but I'm really missing this kind of data on this region or this kind of capability on this region, it's good for us actually to connect the dots and say, wait a minute, there is this payload that has been testing under this environment that has this capability that would match your need. And we put two and two together to make sure that the upstream that I was talking about before and the downstream actually are put together through one of our missions.
Is it a hard sell to bring a new customer on board? I mean, does it take hours and hours? What's the selling or the marketing process like? I've always wondered, how do you have to convince people? Do you have to struggle against competition? Or by the time a customer has been identified, the sale's practically already been made?
It depends. The kind of customers that we engage are very diverse. Some of them are faster, some of them are slower. To continue with the kind of example that I was putting you earlier, for instance, if someone has been developing a technology in a compatible way with the tools that I was describing before, and we have helped them through that process passively, because it's mostly like the software and maybe some engineering time from our engineers to you know, to provide some advice on a specific testing or some activities that are more space needs. But if one of those customers has been developing that payload and that technology in a compatible way with our satellite, it's much easier for them just to want to fly the demonstration of that technology with us. Or if we find actually the end user that really needs that kind of payload flying, basically to contract that payload or to contract that sensor to be flown in one of the missions that we are going to fly. This has happened, for instance, in a project that we are developing for the European Space Agency. All right, so it's a project called Mantis that is going to be a high-resolution satellite on multispectral band. And the camera had been developed by a company in Spain called Satlantis for several years. We were making sure that payload would be compatible with the capabilities that we have on our development kit and the software environment. And now it's a payload that we are going to fly in a mission with the European Space Agency, right? So in those cases, actually connecting the dots, it might have taken a lot of time for everything to happen, but the sales effort, it's just doing the connection at the right time, right? In other cases, yes, when you really need to figure out exactly what an end user and an end customer in the downstream sector really needs, sometimes you need to have a lot of discussions and engagement to truly understand what their needs are and figuring out that infrastructure. And that kind of contract, that kind of deal can take also a bit longer. We also see a difference depending on the size of the company. So for startups, usually it's faster actually to take the decision and to decide on whether they want to fly something or not if they have the resources. But for some other institutional missions, usually there is a process, a tendering process, and you have to obey that timing, right? So it depends a lot. Sorry, I cannot give a more clear answer, but it honestly just does depend on the kind of customer that we are engaging on a case-by-case basis.
Do you do the sales, or do you actually have a marketing team that does all of this?
We have a team dedicated to sales, a market development team, yes. And it's a team where each one of the salespeople has an expertise in different domains. So we have people that know more about remote sensing and specific fields within remote sensing, and we have people that know more about telecommunications. So yes, and definitely that's another area where we are recruiting strongly. So if there is people in the audience that have experience selling space missions and are knowledgeable about both customers either in the remote sensing area for some of the different verticals or in the telecommunication field, we really want to hear about you because we want to grow that team.
Do you have plans down the road to become a public company, or is private what you want to be forever and a day?
But this day, no one can say forever. Or everyone has to keep the doors open to the different financing mechanisms that there might be out there. At the moment, we are very well as we are, and we are totally focused on the customers. That's what we care about, and we are not obsessed on a specific kind of exit or IPOing or anything like that. What we really want is to solve these problems that we see globally, and making sure that our technology just helps having a strong impact into solving these problems. I really, really believe that the companies that aim at solving these biggest challenges are the ones that eventually are going to be the most valuable. Because if you solve those big problems, sometimes those problems that are not very attractive to others, but that can bring a lot of efficiency and effectiveness and operational excellence through those solutions, and you manage actually to solve those big challenges, eventually the reward is going to come commercially and in terms of the value of the company as well.
We have another question. It may be the last one of the day. Madeline I don't get very many Madeline emails. That's interesting. Madeline is from Seattle, and she says, I've been going over your website as we talk, and I notice you have a way to subscribe to your newsletter. If I do subscribe to it, what kind of information is in your newsletter?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we usually actually put information about some of the projects that we are supporting, particularly everyone developing payload, developing sensor, developing capabilities. We also bring some updates on what we see happening in the market. But I must say that maybe we are not as active on the newsletter as we should be. We are doing something that it's more on a quarterly basis, something sometimes a bit longer. But we found that that's a great way actually to keep people updated with the progress that we are doing, and most importantly that our partners and customers are also doing.
So it's free, and I guess that's the best way to stay up on what you're doing, but I'm going to jump to a conclusion. Correct me if I'm wrong. It would also be a pretty good way to stay up and current on what's happening with the satellite industry in the UK as well as the rest of Europe. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
We are at the hour point. Have we omitted information that you wanted to talk about regarding Open Cosmos? What else would you like to bring to our attention, or what do you think we should focus on for the future of what your plans are? Like, what's on the drawing board? What do you think is going to happen in 2021?
Yeah, for us, it's all about partnering. So we really want to make sure that anyone that is developing a sensor or a new technology that they want to get into the market, or people that already have those sensors and those capabilities developed, please do get in touch with us, because we really want to know about everything that you are capable of doing to see if we can match you with those end users on the downstream side. We also partner a lot with companies that do additional processing on the imaging or on the data that will come from the satellites. So there are companies or universities or organizations out there that have knowledge on AI processing, on analytical tools that can bring more value from imagery. We really want to hear about you and see how we can probably actually put work packages or connect you with some of those end-user customers, so we together can develop services for them that are more valuable. And this is something that we are already partnering with a number of companies, and it's working really well. And the last thing, but not less important, is also partnering with those friends of ours in the space industry that have obviously launch capabilities, ground segment. We are really eager, actually, to support everyone that is right now having an entrepreneurial spirit towards the space industry. We've been there ourselves 5 years ago. We were just kicking off this company, and I really, really, really want to encourage absolutely everyone listening to your show with an speed to actually contribute to the developments happening in the space industry, to make sure that they don't let this opportunity pass. We have the feeling that the disruption and the innovation that is happening in the space sector during these last years, it's really, really once in a century. And we are really fortunate, us as space engineers, actually, to be able to be leading in this time and to contribute through our work and through our efforts to what I believe will be one of the keystone technologies of the future.
Last email that just came in, Richard is in Las Vegas, and he says, I'm one of the students who's stuck at home because of the pandemic that David mentioned when he was starting this program. I'm curious, do you have student internships? Do people from the United States qualify for internships? What can you say about internships or student opportunities?
Yes, there are. We open them regularly. There is, if you go to careers at Open Cosmos, there is an open section when people can, particularly for internships or for positions that are regularly on their selection, they can send a cover letter, the information, and we will come back to you. The other thing that I would advise to any student out there is that when they go into the website, they register for OpenLab and OpenApp, which is the simulator that I was talking about before. And even if your university does not have maybe the open kit, the development kit that allows you to do the hardware in the loop, you can still access OpenLab if you are a student and run all of the simulations with different configurations of the satellites that we are able to provide, derived constellation scenarios, coverage scenarios, and do all of that from your home. So please go. It's an excellent way to learn, and it's an even more it's even a better way, actually, to test exploring
how
you can become a space entrepreneur.
So how do they find that on your website? Where do they go?
There is a section that is related to OpenLab, and within that section, they can register and they will have access to the tool. If you have any trouble finding it or accessing it, just drop an email and into the contact section, and we'll make sure actually that the customer success team gets back to you, giving you access to those tools.
Okay, and my hearing is not always okay. So are you saying OpenLab, L A B as in boy?
OpenLab, like laboratory.
Okay. Okay, I'll make sure I put that in the summary of the program, and then for questions, there's a contact button on your website.
Yeah, and happy to provide you, David, also the link, the specific link to the registration page, so everyone from your show can easily access it.
Okay. Well, if you want to do that, I'll put it in the summary. I'll probably have the program up and running with audio and podcasting by later this afternoon. The written summary will probably be posted early in the morning, California time.
Awesome.
And
awesome. That's great.
You do have current openings listed for people interested in work, either from here or, I guess, throughout Europe. So you have that listed on your website. I'm on that page right now. So
that's correct. Yeah.
You like engineers, don't you?
We love engineers, and we love working hard. So if you really want to make sure that your technology is flying soon, just click on that button and come join us.
Rafael, it's been great talking to you. I'm going to sign up for your newsletter to stay up and posted, and hopefully we can follow you and talk to you again down the road as you continue to grow and expand with these services. And we thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure, and it's been also a pleasure to answer all the questions for your audience. What a delight. What a Friday treat it was.
And I will send you the links once the show is all archived, so you'll have it. And again, I hope that we can talk some more down the road and continue to hear about what you're doing and where you're going. And keep safe and stay healthy and well. And holidays are coming up, so I hope you and all have a great holiday season. And we will definitely stay in touch with you. So thank you again for being on the Space Show.
Thank you, David. Likewise.
Okay. Bye-bye. Listeners, we're back on Sunday. And come back for that. And everybody, it's a weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay well. And we want you back Sunday, of course. Goodbye from Rafael, David, and The Space Show.